welcome to a new episode of Global Citizenship in Practice. I'm Harshini Rajkumar, Junior Fellow at the Melton Foundation and your host for today. The topic for this episode is mental health for millennials. We have with us Ayushi and Adishi from Mental Health Talks India, where they initiate conversations around mental health in India through lived experience, empathy, love, and support. It's great to have you here with us. Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourselves and how MHTI started?
Hi, I am Ayushi and I'm the co-founder of Mental Health Talks India along with Adishi here. So Mental Health Talks India started in 2018 April. That was when a lot of things were going on in both of our lives on personal levels in terms of our own mental health. And we had been discussing a lot around how we want to start something that wherein we can talk about mental health and make the discussions a lot more accessible and just out there. Because back in 2018 April, when we started this on social media, there were almost no players or pages on which were talking about mental health, which nowadays are anyway. So there was one particular incident at my university specifically, wherein I had to undergo a lot of mental health stress, and which sort of, I guess, acted as the catalyst into me just opening Instagram and starting off with this page. And that has been our journey since then. And Adishi just joined a couple of months later or something like that. And since then, we've been working on, I think, advocating around mental health in ways that are easier and accessible to a lot of people out there.
Hi, hello. I'm Adishi and I've been with Mental Health Talks India since May 2018. And yeah, it's been quite a journey working on this with Ayushi. And currently I'm studying at the University of British Columbia.
That sounds great. It's really impactful to hear that you took your personal journey and made it something so helpful for all of the people out there who really need a catalyst like yours. So in light of the pandemic, can you tell us one activity that helped keep you both calm during the quarantine?
I think what has kept me calm personally has been just reminding myself that I cannot always be calm during this pandemic, because the pandemic by its own definition would tell you that, okay, it's not something that is quote unquote normal as a situation, and thereby there are going to be times when you are not going to feel calm, and that is completely okay. So I've just been trying to remind myself that, and that's been quite helpful apart from just some very practical ways of like just painting stuff and some things like that. Just indulging in my personal hobbies, that has been helpful as well.
Quite similar to Ayushi, I think. I have barely been calm, because this is not a situation where you can be calm. But some things that have been like anchoring me are books and sometimes talking to friends and baking. I also jumped on the train and started baking during the pandemic. So that was something. But yeah, these are some things that I've been doing.
This sounds great. And I think it's really important for our audience to know that it was okay if they weren't okay during the quarantine. What are a few ways in which one can keep calm during distressing situations such as a pandemic?
I think I'll just repeat my answer, that firstly, reminding yourself that you may not and you need not necessarily be calm during a pandemic all the time, because that just setting a lot of expectations from your own self, which are not fair. So just starting there can be very helpful. And apart from that, obviously doing things that you like, which might be painting, which might just be talking to a friend, or doing anything that you particularly like, and engaging yourself with that can always be of help.
Yeah, and just adding on to what Ayushi said, I think it's very important, especially because of how easily we are able to see what other people are doing, especially the good parts, to not feel pressured to be a certain way. I think that is something that happened with a lot of us. And it's okay. It's okay if you are going slow. It's okay. The only thing you do in a day is just get up and have a bath. It's absolutely fine.
Definitely. I agree with what both of you are saying. And it's important that we sort of engage ourselves in enjoyable activities to contribute to our positive affect. How do you think one can tell if they have a mental health issue or if it's simply overthinking?
I think it sort of depends and varies from person to person, because obviously all of us can start, whether we do think that we are facing some mental health issues or not, we can just start off by keeping ourselves more aware about what mental health is. And I think there's a lot of awareness anyway nowadays in India, at least in the kind of circles that we are speaking to right now, that is the privileged circles, because we have to agree to that. And apart from that, I think reminding yourself that it may not necessarily be overthinking is also important, because then you might just end up gaslighting your own self, which you don't want to do. Because when you are dealing with mental health issues per se, it can anyway be very distressing. And so that I think is very important, because when you read around mental health, you would get to know, and even if you do not necessarily read a lot around mental health, you would know how you're feeling, because mental health is not necessarily something that is extremely inaccessible or extremely difficult to understand. You may not necessarily be able to put it into specific words that would term it into, like, okay, these are the illnesses or these are the issues that I particularly have, but you would definitely be able to figure out that, okay, things are not going well for me. And once you do have some sort of semblance of that, you can perhaps start seeking help, professional help, talk to a friend who can help you work throughout those situations, and you all can organize your own plans.
Also, I think it's important to be aware of the fact that the pathology of mental health specifically is not entirely flawless in a lot of ways. So yeah, I think the whole idea of, am I just overthinking, is this like something else, or like somebody doing that for someone else, is in itself not something that we would particularly encourage, because we believe that there is like, we know what we are going through more than anybody else. So there is that autonomy, and there needs to be autonomy. But of course, there is also a fine line between that and between doing things like self-medicating. So that's something that's definitely not something that one should do without without medical supervision. But with respect to knowing if you have a mental health condition and things like that, I think that's something that you need to trust yourself with, and you can, you should.
Yes, I think it's great for the audience to hear that it's something we can trust ourselves with, but also it helps to seek additional help so that we can get the right sort of treatments and guidance for the same. What do you think definitely the roles of experts by experience are? That is, people with lived experience of mental health in policy formulation, advocacy, and outreach.
I think depending on how important all of this is for survivors of mental health conditions and survivors and users of mental health conditions, I think it feels kind of something that does not even require any further elaboration, because it is as simple as something that is affecting us should also include us, in the sense that, and not just include us in the sense that, okay, yeah, like a tokenistic inclusion, but in the sense that we, like I just said, that we know best what serves us. So we should know what is happening, and we should have a say in what happens.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think it's very important, as Adishi said, that we can't just be okay with the tokenistic representation, that, okay, on a panel, we'll just invite one or two people with experts and term them as experts by experience, and then not let them speak enough on the panel, or say brands inviting people with lived experiences and then not paying them, but then they would pay a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And because I think personally, I wouldn't name the brands, of course, but there are brands who have reached out to us and who have asked us to collaborate with them on mental health projects or mental health campaigns, and these are very biggish brands who have a lot of things on their own, like who have a lot of money in their kitty and everything of that sort. And but then when they got to know that we do not have psychology degrees and that we are not mental health professionals as how they like to define it, then they were like, okay, you guys don't have the expertise, so we don't want to talk to you anymore. But that's just unfair, and that's just a very parochial vision, I think, because a lot of the times we know that the way we will talk about mental health and the kind of insights that we would bring into a mental health discourse through our own experience, that would speak to a lot more people than, say, a pathologized understanding of a psychiatrist would speak to a layman or a casual or just a person who also thinks that they are dealing with some mental health issues on their own as well. So I think maintaining that balance and just recognizing that expert by experience is expertise. It's a legitimate form of expertise. It's really important because I think in India right now, we are really lagging far behind that.
I definitely agree. I think that relatability around the topic can be provided only through collaboration of these experts of expertise who can really give us, like you said, the important terms that can actually be broken down to others who are facing the same. Speaking of which, what do you think one can do as an individual to break the stigma around us regarding mental health?
I think to begin with, it's very important to keep talking about it without, of course, romanticizing it, and to make sure that if someone around us is talking about it, we encourage it instead of ignoring them or shaming them, for example.
So yeah, to break the stigma, the first thing, as Adishi said, and the foremost thing is just talking about it. Talking about mental health is the most important thing, and you can extend from that. Then you, if you want to pursue it in a more formal professional way, you are always more than welcome to do that.
Definitely. I think it's really important for us to be having these small conversations about mental health in our small circles. And ultimately, they'll add up to a greater impact, which is breaking the stigma. What do you think the roles of an ally are to help someone who's diagnosed or appears to be struggling?
Taking from the previous question, I think the most important thing is to make sure that you give them the space that they need, and also talk to them, provide them the support instead of assuming that they would need. Just ask them directly or just nudge them politely that, is this something that I can help you with? So for me, I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think there's a post also that we created on this, that reaching in is as important, if not more important, as reaching out, because there are a lot of ways in which a lot of times we will post, because we work on Instagram, so I'll just give you an Instagram example, that we will post stories on Instagram about how guys reach out to us, if you're struggling, reach out to us. But then when our own friends are also maybe perhaps simultaneously posting a story which says a lot about depression, if they are sharing some quote, something or the other around that, even if they're sharing their own experiences, there are a lot of the times when people wouldn't even bother to talk to them or reach into them, because the kind of hesitation, the awkwardness of it all sort of makes people, like prevents people from reaching into people, or I don't know what the argument behind that is. But I think as an ally, it's really important to put yourself out there and not just expect people to turn up at your door and ask for help, because it's important to remember that when you are dealing with mental health issues, and this I also speak from personal experience, that it is very difficult to reach out for help, because you anyway many of the times feel that you are a burden, and then you don't want to disturb anyone else. So it's important that an ally makes you feel loved, important, and that they are going to be there, and not just on social media, but after that and beyond that as well.
Yeah, and I would also like to add that sometimes it can be difficult to talk even when somebody reaches out to you. So you don't have to nudge them to like constantly tell me what's happening, tell me what's happening. Just tell them that whatever it is, I'm here whenever you want somebody to talk to. I think that's also a very important line that needs to be drawn for an ally who is trying to reach in to someone who's struggling.
Yeah, I think this is also like that, no? That you can't save another person and you will not be able to, and you should not act as this savior that, okay, I am here, I am your knight in shining armor, because you shouldn't put that pressure on yourself and on the other person as well. Just be there as a friend, as a companion, and that would be really, really helpful than you acting as a savior, because that will just put undue pressure on your own self as well. And then, as the saying goes, you can't pour from an empty cup as well.
Yes, exactly.
Right. I think it's important for all of us as potential allies to remind ourselves that we need to draw lines with interdependency and also possible burnout. Speaking of social media, how do you think technology can be used in mental health to make interventions more effective?
I mean, technology is anyway right now being used a lot, especially in these days with the pandemic and everything going on around us, because most of us are seeking therapy with the help of technology. So that bit has been happening. Like, I mean, I also did a session, like I also sort of consulted my psychiatrist in the past few days over a video call, because I did not want to go to a hospital during the pandemic, that is. So I think tech has been really helpful, but then at the same time, the very fact that a term like, say, digital detox exists, it tells us a lot about how the digital can be toxic. So it is something that we need to be very wary of, because then you will have privacy concerns. Tech can be very invasive. It can be very intrusive. You will get ads of things that you are just talking about. If you're just talking about something to some other person, you will get ads of that. So privacy is anyway these days a myth. So I think being very aware of how tech is being used is of foremost importance.
Yes, I think so too. I think that tech can be a very valuable tool for all of us to seek help in a broader way, but also we need to know how it can be controlling and toxic in its own ways. How do you think one can take care of themselves in an increasingly connected world with so many demands and distractions?
I think taking care is quite relative in this sense. So, for example, during the lockdown, there were a lot of us who were stuck with abusers, and that is when technology and being able to talk to our chosen families was something that like helped us to get through the time. So in that sense, for me, taking care of myself would be to staying connected with the people that I actually want to be connected to. But at the same time, I also understand that it gets overwhelming and distracting in a very capitalist productivity sense, that, oh, I'm getting distracted from my things like that. I think for that, it's just things that you eventually work out. I don't think that there is one solution. Like, there are so many influencers who also keep talking about how they try different things. So there are apps or there are settings in some phones which will help you, or which will let you lock some apps after a particular time of the day, or like you can use it only for a certain duration in a particular day. So I think those are things that you eventually figure out for yourself. And yeah, there is no one solution for it, I think.
Right. I think in our exploration of technology, we can all find out tiny new ways to find ourselves from being sucked into this hole of distraction through different media. Speaking of multiple media, let's talk about memes. Memes are a huge source of information these days, and they're talking about mental distress more than ever. What are your views on it?
So I'm a person who loves memes. Like, I just love memes like anything. But then at the same time, I wouldn't be so sure of calling memes as a source of information or considering them as a source of information, because you have to consider that there's a lot of disinformation these days as well on internet. And I mean, it has been there for quite a long time. And memes can be used and are being used to spread disinformation as well. So I think keeping memes as, say, hinting towards some incident or some event that has happened, or as something, as hints to a particular issue, can be more than enough. Because apart from that, at the end of the day, memes are memes, and they will not be nuanced, because that is not the nature of a meme. Meme is supposed to be to the point or direct, or just hit you in maximum 10 words, or maybe just with a picture as well. So keeping that in mind is, I think, really important. And having said that, memes can be really helpful in, specifically in terms of mental health, can be helpful in making the conversations more accessible and more fun in a sort of way. I think, yeah, that's what I have in mind.
Yeah, and just to add to that, it's important, specifically because it's about mental health, for even memes to be extremely responsible. Like, you can be responsible and fun at the same time. So you don't have to put loads of research and do other things like write an essay and things like that. But even if you're creating a meme, you should know that it's something that is not a topic that is still widely accepted. So it's important that you are responsible about it while also being funny, of course.
I do think that memes can be such a huge source of relief as well, but of course they come with a huge responsibility. There is this term called toxic positivity that we've all come across. What are your comments on that?
I have a an instant reaction to this term, honestly, or just to the term positivity, actually, because of how toxic positivity has seeped in. I think it's an understanding that is very important to have, at least right now, and increasingly it's getting more and more important, because as we are talking more about mental health or about just emotional and mental distress, we are also going in the zone of that not everything is so much. Don't be so negative all the time. Why are you always crying? Why are you always cribbing? And then it very subtly, or maybe not so subtly sometimes, slides into ki, no, but positivity is the one thing that can help us and things like that. So that's, I don't know. For me personally, it has been so harmful. I would prefer not having someone to talk to as compared to somebody who's constantly telling me or showing me how my life is so positive and so nice. What do I even have to feel, I don't know, depressed about? And yeah, so it's just quite a lot, and it's not something that we should be doing anymore, at least. But that's this is the environment that we have created, thanks to also our families, because it's still difficult for a lot of Indian families, or most Indian families, to even imagine somebody in their families or their child going through a mental health condition. So it's the first impulse is, oh, but what is wrong? What are we not giving you? Things like that. So yeah, I have very strong feelings about that, and all of those feelings say that you should not do this.
No, and I also think there's this point, that you can't always be positive, because it's not possible, A, on a personal level, because you must feel all your feelings. That I think this phrase, feel all your feelings, would just be one of the very primary phrases that you would hear from a therapist's mouth, that, okay, just feel all your feelings. Don't indulge in this, okay, I have to be positive always, because it's not healthy, first of all. And apart from that, I think given the scenario of our country, of our world right now, in terms of the socio-political situations that have been happening all around us, it's not possible to be positive all the time. I mean, if my community is going to face structural violence at its very core, how am I supposed to just be positive? It's not possible. I can't do that. The systems are not going to let me do that, which also tells us that mental health is not just an issue of an individual. It's not only a personal issue. The personal is political and thereby mental health is political. So I think reminding ourselves of that is very important, because a lot of the times when you will see these discussions on social media, of course, happening that, okay, guys, you just need to love yourself. Guys, you just need to take care of yourself. Here is one avocado toast that I've prepared to take care of myself. Or here is one mask that I've applied to take care of myself. And this will help me in thinking, in just being positive, in creating that positive aura or things like that, right? And that is just, they like, people who will talk in these terms, they would never consider mental health in a larger social structural formulation, that the structures of our society, be it religion, caste, class, gender, sexuality, and everything, your skin color, your race, everything is going to determine your mental health at the end of the day. And if you're going to talk about mental health and self-love, self-care and positivity only in terms of avocado toast and sage burning and kale salad eating terms, then it's not going to help anyone. It's just going to help your limited coteries of South Delhi, South Bombay and stuff like
that. I think this is like, wherever we talk, we always try to make sure that we raise this point, especially for our fellow mental health organizations, because, okay, like we... at some point, we don't expect that from lay people who are still like exploring or trying to come to terms with what the entire concept of mental health is, in fact. But the organizations and the individuals working in this space, it's like a very desperate appeal to not do this, to not indulge in talking about some random thing while the country is literally like, so much is going on, which is definitely going to affect everyone's mental health, at least like the community that is at the receiving end of it. So yeah, I just wanted to add this.
Definitely, I think that all of us are responsible to quit talking about mental health in such a unidirectional, only positive way, because we do have to have a balance with all our emotions, and only that can really add to being a complete or a fulfilling mental well-being. So let's talk about certain vocabulary that is associated with mental health, and especially in informal settings. What are the issues that arise from using casuality in slang?
I believe language is certainly very important when it comes to mental health, because there are a lot of times when you would hear people very casually throwing terms like, oh, I am so OCD, but when they are basically just referring to their preferences of keeping stuff organized in a certain way. And that is not to invalidate what they are feeling, and that is not us gaslighting them in any way. That is to say that there is a tendency of people very casually throwing mental health related terms in a way which sort of undermines the seriousness or the intensity of what a mental health condition can look like and can appear like. So I think that is very irresponsible, because depression is not just sadness, right? So I think reminding ourselves of that is very important. I mean, the way we are going to use our words, the way we choose our words to depict things or talk about things that we've been feeling is more important than we know. Adishi, what do you have to say to this here?
Yeah, I think as much as... So I'm thinking of the conversations that I have sometimes with my friends, and they are not always very responsible ways of talking about mental health or specifically mental health conditions, because I am living with it and I get frustrated, and sometimes I just want to like not be living with all of this. So sometimes I am irresponsible, but I come with the knowledge that this is something I live with and this is something I absolutely detest living with. So I'm talking about it in a particular context with a person who is also living with a mental health condition. So with respect to language specifically, I think it's important to sometimes laugh about it a little bit, especially if you are going through it, because that's very important. But if you are using it in a degrading way, especially if you don't have that personal experience, then it's absolutely, like, there is no, nothing that can salvage it or make it over. So, yeah, I think that's one important point that I wanted to add.
I definitely think that our words are very, very important for people with lived experiences and people undergoing mental health issues. So I think we have to be very careful with these words because they can also negatively impact any progress we make in the field of mental health. Do you think there's a growing association of self-worth with productivity? How do you think social media is acting as a contributor to this?
There has been associations of self-worth with productivity. And I would definitely say that, yes, it has been increasing more so with this. When the pandemic started, I think last year when the lockdown started over here in India, in March. But then when everyone on social media was like, okay, let's do this. And all the motivational speakers on Instagram and YouTube and everywhere, people were like gesticulating so much and talking about how we must do 10 tasks in a day and that is how we must keep ourselves productive, and in this very capitalistic mode of production that we all exist in right now. I think associations of self-worth with productivity have been there for quite a long time, and it's just a very unfair and unjust form of association, because as a person living with depression, I have a lot of days when I am not able to be as productive as I would want to be. And it's taken literally years and years of therapy and understanding of my own experience to remind myself that, okay, that is fine. And if I am not being quote unquote productive in one day, it doesn't mean that I don't deserve good things in the world. And that's also a thing, that how you define productivity, because me taking care of my own mental health, me taking an off day from work, me completing my therapy homework, that is all me being productive. Me just thinking out my thoughts, rearranging my thoughts, working on my trauma of years and years, that is me being productive. Just because I present you a tangible product out there that, okay, is that these were my experiences, these were the things that I did in a particular day, and here is the report of it, or here is a product that I made out of it. That does not mean, that is not the only thing that will mean productivity.
Yeah, and to also, like, we both of us were quite fed up with how this was getting worse day by day during the lockdown, and for which #go corona go, because we were like, people need to calm down, matlab people need to like hold their horses, not do 10,000 tasks and enroll in 10,000 courses, because oh my god, suddenly you have time. But that's a pandemic that you are going through. So yeah, and of course, like Ayushi said, that the notion of productivity in itself, we need to reconsider it, especially for what it does to people living with like different disabilities. So yeah, I think that's very important, and it just depends on what you are able to, like, basically the essence is that you are worthy irrespective of what you do. That is something that we forget, or irrespective of what you don't do or can't do. And that's a very important thing that needs to be reaffirmed constantly, like for our for the thing that like a small campaign that we did, we would just put tasks like get up and take a shower. Matlab, that's it, that's the productivity. That like for you, productivity can look that way particular day, and that's okay.
Definitely. I think these associations of self-worth with productivity can often be very uninclusive, and they create unhealthy expectations as well. I think it's something that has to be communicated with people of all age groups. How do you think this kind of mental health awareness can be incorporated in schools and colleges?
So I think there are some people working in this already, which is great and hopeful to see. But so my field of study is in something called social emotional learning, short for like the short form for this is SEL. And the focus of that is to take emotional and mental health awareness to schools, to people, like to various stakeholders involved in learning. So including teachers, parents, students, working professionals also. So I think that's a great tool. It's an evolving tool. Though I would also like to add that, especially in India right now, it's made into something that is very far removed from reality. And when I say that, I mean that it's made into something that is absolutely apolitical. Even though in its essence, it's something that is based on principles of inclusion, equity, and empathy. So I think that's very important. And it's, as much as it is hopeful to see a lot of new organizations coming up for this and things like that, it's also important to remember that none of this exists in isolation. If we are telling children that your emotional health is important, all your emotions are important, we also need to, at the same time, recognize that the reason they think that some emotions are not okay is the society that we have created and the culture that we have created around emotions. So you can't keep telling them, oh, like you can cry, it's okay, but then again after some time shame them for being sad or for crying. It's very important to have that understanding of the culture, especially of the current events around us. Like I recently found out that there is supposed to be like something called a Desh Bhakti curriculum. And I think that goes against all the tenets that SEL has, in how I understand it at least.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, just I can talk about colleges in from my own experience at my universities. It has been that universities do not have counselors, or at least enough counselors, and most of the time they are overburdened. Most of the times they will not be as Adishi said, that they would not be as inclusive in a lot of ways, that they would not consider the structural reasons of someone experiencing distress as legitimate reasons, and that people would just term them as, okay, you are just being difficult, or you're just being radical, and that's just supposed to be an insult in a lot of ways. So that doesn't really help anyone. I think colleges need to, and universities, schools, everyone needs to wake up, and because you can't just have awareness without providing them with enough resources. I mean, I can go right now, Mental Health Talks India can go right now and conduct awareness sessions at a lot of universities and colleges. And then students will get aware, so to say, which they, I think, already are, given right now with the level of awareness that we have, at least in the sections that we are speaking to, I mean, at this point of time. And then if they need resources and they don't find adequate resources in their colleges, the awareness program is not going to help them, right? Because even if I think that, okay, I do have some issues and if I want to work on them, but then I have nowhere to go to, and that therapy is going to be really expensive, a psychiatrist is going to cost me a lot, and my university counselor does not have adequate space for me and is not good enough for me in a lot of ways, that's just not going to help anyone out. So I think there are a lot of structural changes that we need to bring into our education system overall.
We definitely do need a lot of awareness further than what we already have. And for it to be introduced in the much lower levels of schooling. And also, there is a very dire need for adequate resources, like you rightly mentioned. What are ways to maintain a healthy work-life balance? I think this is a very pressing question for all of us, given that we have so much influence of social media and telling us that we have to have a fulfilling life and also have a very productive afterlife after work. So what are your views on that?
The onus of creating or maintaining a healthy work-life balance, I believe, should really start shifting from the employees to the employers, because an employee who is working in a company, who's working in an organization that thrives on the quote-unquote hustle culture, or that you have no fixed working hours, and if you complain regarding that, then you are not a serious enough worker, and that you are just not fit enough for this job, you're not taking this job very seriously, if you're not giving your entire life to it, then that is just a very toxic culture that we already have. And I think we need to work on that, and employers need to really firstly work on that. They can't arrange just annual mental health workshop for like 5 hours, 4 hours, and then ask their employees to just get lost with their personal lives, and because they will not give you any time for your personal lives. And if you ask for that, then it's just that as if you've just done some very sacrilegious work out there by just asking for something that is your own and you deserve it. There need to be fixed working hours. I think that is pretty much the very basic that we can have over here.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Ayushi. I think it's very important to stop holding employees responsible for their mental health, because we need to see that they are employed. So it's not like they have a lot of autonomy with respect to how much time they can give, because whenever they even try to have that autonomy or like reclaim that autonomy, it's like instantly seen as something that they are not serious, like Ayushi said. So I have a lot of friends who keep talking about how they have this pressure, at least in the first year of their, like when they start working, to keep performing, so that like if you say no to a particular task in your first year, it instantly decides what your journey is going to be like if you decide to stay in that organization more than like a year. So I think that's not okay. Matlab, with organizations constantly like increasingly trying to bring mental health into their workspace, it is not going to stop at just telling your employees that, oh, like we are bringing on this speaker or things like that. It's important to reassess your culture, your organization's culture, and how you are doing things, how you are expecting people to do. In what ways are you expecting them to put aside their like real life big problems that they are dealing with alongside working? And I think this also goes true for colleges and schools. So yeah,
I really like that point you made about how it's not just about the employers, but it's also, it has to be employed. So I think that brings us to the end of this podcast, and I hope we've all learned something through today's episode. We've covered so many topics in the light of the pandemic, in ways in which you can keep yourselves going, how to seek help, and why it's important to seek help. We've also covered topics about ways in which the media can help us and can also be perils to our own experience. Now I'd like to ask Adishi and Ayushi to give us their call of action. What do you think you will be doing in the future to continue to aid to the situation in mental health?
I believe Mental Health Talks India is going to grow more in terms of trying to reach out to people, in terms of reaching out to people from different spheres of life. And we have been working on that in terms of the social media content that we create. We have been trying to create content in Hindi a lot more so that we can reach out to people who speak Hindi as well, because Hindi and English are basically just the only languages that we know, and we want to expand further and incorporate content in other languages of India as well. But and so we just hope to do that in future. And I think as of now, we have also been working a lot on our blog, and because there are a lot of ways in which I think we want people who have been dealing with mental health, who have their own lived experiences of mental health, we have been trying to put their stories out there so people can read through those stories, relate through those stories, and just tell those stories, because we need a lot more stories like that to be out there. And that is what we have been doing, and we would love for people to come and share their experiences with us and talk about what their experience has been in terms of mental health, be it as a person with lived experience, be it as a caregiver, in be it as a researcher. We just want to create more and more conversations on mental health. I think that is what our larger goal has been, and we're just going to work on that. Adishi, do you have more to add to it?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well, but also I think because of the political climate in the country, our focus is also increasingly going to be to push for content that is speaking to what is happening, instead of just putting like random posts about, oh, self-love, oh, things like that, because that is not going to work, because we are doing a disservice to ourselves and to the entire concept of mental health that we stand by completely like ignoring what is happening, which also of course comes at its own personal cost, because we both live with a mental health condition, so it's difficult for ourselves in the first place to get ourselves out of the place that we get shoved into thanks to this country. But yeah, I think it's like a very, like I also previously mentioned in a previous question, like a very desperate call to action from our end would be to not look away from what is happening. Take your time, process what it is doing to you, but then talk about it. Talk about the implications that it has for mental health. Talk about what's happening, how we need to reach out to more people instead of just being stuck to Instagram and to people that we are very conveniently connected to right now.
Thank you so much for what you've been doing in the field of mental health, and also for joining us today. I'm sure the audience has had a lot to take away from this. And I just want to say that we'd love to continue collaborating with you and in making all the small impact we can for a greater change. We at the Melton Foundation aim at creating platforms for change makers across the world to collaborate with each other for greater impact. And we encourage you, the listeners, to start playing an important role in breaking stigma. Start with small conversations with your family and friends, read up content and how you can be a better ally. Follow Mental Health Talks India on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for more mental health related content. You can find our global citizenship journey at our social media pages on Instagram, Facebook. Stay tuned for more episodes of Global Citizenship in Practice. You can find more about us at meltonfoundation.org. Thanks for listening.